Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What can get a retired sheriff back into the thicket of duty quick? Demons around your town. IFC hit that spot appropriately this Halloween night with Stand Against Evil. Great executive producer Dana Gould joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. After an Emmy-winning first season on Showtime, Years of Living Dangerously begins season 2 Sunday night on the National Geographic Channel. Once again, notables stand across the globe to encounter the consequences of climate change. But this time, they've got a quest for solutions. More from executive producer David Dilber later this hour. And we will head live to Australia next hour, making contact with Greg McLean, the creator and executive producer of Wolf Creek, the horror movie hit turned pop TV miniseries. Also ahead, late-breaking news on Matthew Weiner's return to television, and you'll be very pleased to see what he's going to do, thanks to Amazon. Plus much more, and our classic trivia question this week, and Rectified's return is our show to know. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Block Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you aboard this midweek for the program All About Television. 50 degrees, one of the coolest days so far this autumn season here in the Big Apple. We're live to witness for the show about television. 90-day edition for you. A lot of great guests coming away from all over, and it gets better when you are involved. So pick up the phone, raise your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, that's the number, 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the world right here on Blog Talk Radio. We've got our chat room open as well, SimonApple04 by name. You can catch that on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We have our very good friend from Philadelphia already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Dana Gould will be live with us from Los Angeles after a quartet of late-breaking news notes over the last hour. Matthew Weiner, the creator of Mad Men, is coming back to television next year. His vehicle, a new anthology series, 8 episodes, produced with the Weinstein Company for Amazon. According to published reports from the last hour, it will be a $70 million commitment with the Weinsteins and Mr. Weiner, who will create and write all the episodes and direct at least half of them. The show is described as a contemporary anthology series and will be filmed all across the globe. That's the latest we have. We have not had any major comment about the series itself from Weiner, but it will be his first series commitment since Mad Men ended several years ago on AMC. At the same time, the Weinstein folks also have another television project that they announced earlier this afternoon. It's an 8-episode miniseries for Spike TV about the tragedy in Waco, Texas, with some of the cast members already set to go. And again, that is a straight-to-series order expected in 2017. AMC also made some news by committing to a new series from its partners on Humans. We're going to set season 2 either late this year or early next year. That's Channel 4 and Catch It in England. The program is called Loaded, and like Humans, it's tech-oriented in nature. More details to come. And remember Muppet Babies, the wonderful cartoon series from Jim Henson and his Muppet Clan on CBS for several years, won Emmys and Peabody Awards all over the place? Well, it is coming back thanks to Disney Junior. Production starting soon, and again, that will be a 2017 entry. And that is news notes for today. Speaking of AMC Networks, they are delighted with how people got back to The Walking Dead this past Sunday night. That zombie apocalypse aftermath show had 17.4 million viewers, almost a record for that series, now in its 7th season. Well, IFC, starting this Halloween night, is going to get into the evil spirit mood, if you will, and they're hoping for an equally wonderful October Halloween surprise with a show called Stand Against Evil. It is a comedy, given that IFC is the always-on, slightly-off channel, and the star is the wonderful former performer up from Scrubs, John C. McGinley. Joining us live from Los Angeles is the creator and executive producer of the series. His previous work includes stints on The Simpsons and Parks and Recreation, Dana Gould. Dana, great to have you aboard.
Hey, how you doing today?
Very well, thank you. How did this project come your way?
Well, first I have to say I was so thrilled by the news to hear about Matthew Weiner when I first heard you, I'm not joking, I thought you said Anthony Weiner was coming back to television, and I was like, that would be terrible for everyone involved. This is a show I've had in my mind forever. I'm mostly known as a comedian and a comedy writer, but I'm a big horror movie junkie, and that's my, as I like to say, that's my sports. When I was a kid, when I was like 9 years old, maybe 10, I made an 8mm Wolfman comedy with my friends called Howling Harry. And I always thought, like, it'd be really funny to do a show that was really funny but also really scary. And here I am, a couple decades later, still doing the same thing. The show was based on the premise I wanted to do something that was in the genre, something that was scary, that was a horror show. Not so much zombies, more supernatural, more demons, different kinds of creatures. But it also had to be funny for me to be able to do it, because that's really the only thing I know how to do. And I just said, well, what if I took a regular horror story and I just put right in the middle of it a character that didn't belong there, that everybody had to deal with? And it basically boiled down to, what if you had Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but if instead of Buffy, it was my dad? What if a grumpy, old, retired Irish cop had to fight monsters? Totally believed in them, just didn't care. Would much rather be watching the ball game. And that was the origin of the show. It was really that simple. Just, like, remember the old commercials about the Reese's peanut butter cup? You got chocolate in my peanut butter, you got peanut butter on my chocolate. Oh, wait, this actually tastes great. That's pretty much how the show came around.
Sounds like Father doesn't know best in this, and he just has to find himself in this predicament
exactly.
And do something about it.
Right. Father knows we're going to hell.
How did Jonathan McGinley get into this? I had the opportunity to meet him earlier this year when IFC had their special fall season preview, sat next to him over a great lunch at Upland Restaurant, by the way, near the Chelsea area, near Union Square.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommended. They have great pappardelle, and their pizza is just sensational. And he really was very excited about doing this show because he had the opportunity to sort of get this gruff character going and try to fight these demons off at the same time. He loved the challenge.
Yeah, he was great. The show was originally conceived. It was not pitched as a television show. I originally wrote the show as like a funny 5-minute digital thing for Funny or Die or one of those other platforms. I thought I would put on some makeup and play my dad. And I happen to be very good friends with all of the people in the makeup department at The Walking Dead. They're actually really good friends of mine. So I thought, well, I'll just have them make me look about 20 years older, and then I'll get some guy in a monster suit, and it'll be funny. And that was how I was going about doing it. Happened to be having lunch with Pete Aronson, who works at IFC. And he said to me quite just like casually, you should really write a funny X-Files. That would be a great idea for you. And I said, it's really weird that you say that. I just did. And I pitched it to him, and he said, well, for a show, it would have to be different. You'd have to make A, B, C, D. And well, let me go work on it. And then when I took it home, and I kind of beat it up, ripped it apart, put it back together, and I brought it back in, and they said, yeah, this is great. But for a big show, we needed a star. We needed a name, and we needed a real actor. I mean, I know how to act, but I am not an actor. And we looked at a couple of people, and originally, to me, John C. McGinley was too young for the part. I imagined him more like my dad, but John, I met with John, and he just embodied this completely perfect take on this character. It's a little bit of Quint from Jaws. It's a little bit of Sterling Hayden from The Killing. I mean, it's got all, it's a little bit of Lee Van Cleef from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Has this great, amazing sort of character that he built. And it was so much better than I had ever imagined it would be. That was the really wonderful thing about it. You know, I worked on The Simpsons for a long, long time. And in The Simpsons, as a writer, you really control those characters. You can, Dan Castellaneta, Julie Kavner, Hank Azaria, Harry Shearer, they're brilliant. Yardley and everyone else, they're brilliant. But you really have a handle on what that character is and what it's going to do. This was really my first time creating a character and then giving it to an actor and watching that actor sort of break it down and make something completely different. Or make it real, make it three-dimensional. And watching John do that was really a revelation. It was so great. Janet Varney, who is the co-star of the show, she's on You're the Worst. She's a really great friend of mine. I've known her for years. I wrote her part for her, so I really knew what I was going to get. But with John, I really didn't know exactly what he was going to do until he showed up on the set. And the minute he opened his mouth, I was like, oh, this is going to be fantastic.
And part of the fun also with this show is that he's not only facing these demons, but he's also trying to work with Varney's character, who is sort of the, who also has her own, like, power battle with this retiree.
Yeah, well, the whole problem with John's character is that he was the sheriff in this town for 27 years, and he got forced into retirement, and then he gets replaced by a woman. After he's replaced by a woman, they're attacked by demons, but he's much more upset that he's been replaced by a woman than anything from the other world. That, to me, was what made the show funny, is that, you know, there are ways to do comedy horror or horror comedy, and there are different ways to do it. You can do the Young Frankenstein way to do it. You can do it like Beetlejuice or Ghostbusters, or you can do what I did, which I would like. And I think the closest thing to what we've done is An American Werewolf in London, where the scary stuff is really, really scary, and the funny stuff is really, really funny. But it's only funny because the people are behaving the way people normally behave. They're not behaving in a real stylized horror movie way. In the first episode of the show, the show premieres November 2nd, but they're sneaking it on Halloween night. They're going to show the pilot episode on Halloween night as well. There's a big fight with these demons, but in the middle of it, John and Janet are having a big argument over whether or not Starsky and Hutch were gay, which John insists they were because Starsky's sweater had a belt. And to him, that's all the proof he needed. And that, to me, was where the show takes off. It's in those small, real human moments when people are just kind of behaving the way funny people behave, but the way normal people behave.
I'm not trying to picture that, Dana, a belt triggering off that level of an argument.
Well, look, man, you got to know my dad. But you see a sweater with a belt, as my dad would say, guy's sweater had a belt. Read the signs. Come on, buddy. You're a cop. Read the signs.
Understand.
I've often described my dad as...
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dana.
I was just going to say, I'm from Massachusetts originally, and you know, I've often described... My father has two basic emotions, rage and suppressed rage.
And if rage is really big, what about suppressed rage?
Yeah, he's either showing it or covering it up, but he doesn't get to many other emotions.
We are speaking with Dana Gould. He is the creator, the writer, and the executive producer of the new IFC comedy Stand Against Evil. And it premieres, in a special sneaky way, Halloween night, 10 p.m. East Pacific time on IFC. Then goes to its regular time period with two back-to-back episodes, half hour, 10 and 10:30, same hour, Eastern and Pacific time. Dana joins us live in Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise, special midweek edition. Happy you're aboard. Simon Apple Valley, you're live from New York. If you have a question or comment for Dana, don't be shy. Scream and use this number, 646-652-2906, or check into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We're back in our regular time period on Friday, and we got a great hour in store for you. There's a new series on TBS coming your way. It's called People of Earth. It's executive produced by Conan O'Brien, and critics who have seen it really love it. I heard from Eric Deegan of NPR, who thinks it's one of the best new series he has seen in quite a while. We've got an exclusive interview with the creator and co-executive producer. His name is David Jenkins, and we'll catch him as our lead guest. And then we'll check in with one of the new streaming services you can find on your smart TV set or device. It's called Rooster Teeth. We've got the head of programming there, Evan Bregman. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Dana, what's it like for you to be your own boss? Unlike the Simpsons and Park Recreation, where you're a producer, now here you are. You created the show. You're your own boss, but you're also working with McGinley as a producer. You've got one of the people from Silicon Valley also joining as executive producer. You got a major company, Radical Media, producing the show with you. What was it like to sort of juggle all those factors and stay sane?
Well, here's the trick. Don't be afraid to let other people do their job. and then sit back and you don't have to take credit for it. People will give you the credit for it. I worked on The Simpsons. That was like my first, you know, I've been a stand-up comedian since I was 17 years old. And really when I, you know, The Simpsons was like my first sort of grown-up attempt at having a real job where I woke up in the morning and went to an office every day. And I had the really good fortune of working with two really terrific showrunners, Mike Scully and Al Jean. And they both handled authority because they're both writers. They're both very creative. And they handled authority as sort of this thing that they had to do, but it wasn't their goal in life. And that's absolute. And then later on Parks and Rec, Mike Schur, same exact way. First and foremost, really funny people, really great people. And I find that, you know, when the person at the top is cool, then that tends to follow suit all the way through the production, and that was what it was. My trick to being the boss was I never, ever acted like the boss.
As a stand-up comedian, how do you apply that to talking with your actors about how to play their character? Tamara McGinley, who's had a great experience with Scrubs, so like Janet Varney, co-stars, guest stars, how does stand-up sort of play into how you approach character development, not just by the way with actors, but also in your writing?
Sure. I'll give you a great example. Years ago, I was on Seinfeld. I played the character of Fragile Frankie Merman. I was the Summer George. I was Jerry's friend. And I famously gave Jerry a van, and he didn't want it. And I got upset and went into Central Park and dug a hole, and I hid in it. And Jerry and myself both came from stand-up. And stand-up comedians know instinctively the rhythm of a line. I know how to say this line to get the joke out. And we were in a scene together, and we were both doing that. And Andy Ackerman, the director, came up and very politely said, "Neither one of you are acting." And we're like, "I know, but I know how to say this line, so it's funny." And he goes, "But you have to put that away. You're performing. You're not acting." And we had to remember, because we were trained as stand-ups, put that away and behave the way your character behaves. And as a stand-up comedian, that's always tempting to say, here's how the line reads, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba. But that's not acting. That's performing. What was so thrilling and educational to me about working with John is John is an actor. John built that character from the ground up. When we first met, he wanted to know where this guy went to school, what his relationship with his wife was like, how long they've been married. He really created a person, and he's not saying lines. He's behaving, and the lines come out as they come out. And it's funnier that way because it's in reality. And so what I had to do when I started to work with actors was go back on what I would do wrong when I would act. And say, just throw all that away. This is what you want out of the scene. This is what you're coming from, and this is what you need to get. Don't try to hit the laugh. Just behave. Because the way this show works, because it's in a hyper-reality, because there's supernatural stuff going on, you have to perform it straight as a heart attack. You have to play it completely realistically, or the air goes out of the whole thing. And I was really, really lucky to have worked with a great regular cast of John McGinley, Janet Varney, and then Nathaniel Mooney and Deborah Baker Jr. Have very big supporting roles. And so by the time later in the season when I show up as an actor, it's pretty much actor-proof. I couldn't do too much damage.
What kind of demons do you showcase in the series, and how do you showcase them?
Well, I was really, you know, I grew up in the 70s and in the early 80s, and one of my favorite shows growing up was The Night Stalker. If you remember Darren McGavin as Cole Shack, The Night Stalker, and
I certainly do. He was one of our classic trivia questions a couple weeks ago.
Oh, was he really? It was one of my favorite shows as a kid. And oddly, you know, David Chase, who created The Sopranos, that was his first job as a writer, was on Cole Shack, The Night Stalker. And I saw him at the Emmys one year at the height of The Sopranos mania. And I walked up to him at the Emmys and I said, "Oh, my God, I watched something you wrote last night, The Night Stalker. It was so good." And he just like, "Does it still hold up?" He was really fascinated. It was really funny. He was not expecting that night. But what they did on Kolchak was they would have what they call Monster of the Week. Who is the monster this week? And in our show, Stan and Evie are haunted by 172 demons. So we have 172 monsters to come up with. And in the first season, we knocked down 8 of them. And I'm already at work thinking up the next batch. But it was really fun. And there's doesn't rely on too much CGI. I'm very old school. I like guys in big rubber suits or overgrown puppets. And we have a lot of that. And I think that helps the comedy. I think the reason an American Werewolf in London and Evil Dead 2 and John Carpenter's The Thing, I think the reason those movies still work and are still relevant is because all those effects are practical effects. They feel real and you can sense that. And they give the piece a heft, a sense of reality that it needs.
David Gould is the creator, the executive producer, and the key writer of Stand Against Evil. It premieres in a sneaky way on IFC Halloween night. That's Monday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, then repeats 48 hours later for its regular time period on Wednesdays. David's live with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. You're listening to the Talking Ball About Television, Simon Applebaum from the other coast, New York. And if you have a question or comment, we do have a phone call coming in shortly. Yep, use this number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember Fuel TV, Fox's network for both action and extreme sports? Well, it's coming back. We've got the person who ran that network on Monday on Smart Retail Live. His name is T.J. Olivares, and now he's chief content officer of a new streaming service coming soon called Everyday Networks, and Fuel TV will be part of it. He's our lead guest Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific here on Tomorrow We Televise. And now let's take that call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televise. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, you're on the line with Dana Gould, so go for it.
Hey, Dana. Simon had Norman Lear on last week, and your John McGinley's Stan character reminds me a little bit of an Archie Bunker.
Oh,
so
totally. That was in the pitch. What if Archie Bunker had to fight monsters? Not to interrupt your question, but he's based on my dad, and I've often described my dad as Archie Bunker without the elegance and sophistication.
Cool. Well, first off, I mean, that kind of has me hooked already. So I definitely want to see more of the show with just that. But my question, like as a writer or aspiring writer, how do you balance writing characters that are like cantankerous and supposed to be not lovable, and kind of make them comedic and lovable?
That's a great question, and the trick to that is they all have to have a flaw. They have to have a weakness. You have to see that their sort of cantankerous attitude is a defense mechanism. The best example of that was in Eastbound and Down on HBO. He was an innately unlikable character, and one of the first things you saw at the beginning of the series was when he was alone by himself, he burst into tears. And you saw that this guy was in a lot of pain when he was alone, and that allowed you to see him behave like that in public. In Stan, the first scene of the first episode is his wife's funeral. This guy's wife has passed away. He loses his job, and he has, his entire life has been pulled out from underneath him. So it gives him license to be sort of a cantankerous a-hole, for lack of a better term, because he's hurting. The trick to people that behave like a-holes is that you know that underneath they're incredibly vulnerable. That's why it doesn't work with Trump, because he doesn't allow himself to show his vulnerability.
Well, I'm definitely going to check this show out, and definitely loving it. And
I will tell you a great example of it. Here's the greatest example of it, because you're a writer. In Jaws, the scene that lets you, Quint, can you swear on this?
We're a family-friendly show, Dana.
Okay.
So,
the reason
that,
thank you for telling me. Quint is such a pain in the A in Jaws, such an a-hole, but he has that long monologue about what he went through in World War II and how his buddy died right next to him in the ocean because they were attacked by sharks. It allows you to forgive him everything that he does and says because you see that he's in this tremendous pain. And that's a beautiful example of how that works.
Oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. I'm taking notes as you're talking. Allows you to forgive him. I love it. So thank you so much, Dana, and wishing you a huge success with this show and continued success with your career, man.
Thank you, man. Keep writing.
Thank you. Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rick. And thanks for the reference to the interview we did with Norman Lear on Friday that I have to say, Dana, was one of the great moments of my professional life and of this program. We did it on Friday afternoon,
was,
a full half hour, and it was extraordinary. And the man
and he was,
94
was he
years
promoting
incredible.
Divided America?
Excuse me?
Was he promoting Divided America?
No. In fact, we're going to have coming up the person from Years Living Dangerously, and some of the people who did that show are now doing America Divided for Ethics. We had
that's what I meant. That's what I meant.
America
Divided. Yeah,
yeah.
That was
yeah.
produced by the same production company that produced our show, and I actually saw the pilot about a month ago, and it's amazing.
It is. It's doing very well on FX, and we're delighted that 2 weeks ago we had two of the producers on the show, and it's from the same folks that, who had done the first season of Year of Living Dangerously on Showtime. Okay, Rick, thanks again for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Simon.
You got it. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. I understand that your series was shot in Atlanta, and given the Walking Dead is also shot there, do you see any possibility of a crossover of some kind? Because after all, you're working for the parent company of both networks, AMC.
Well, the better reason that there might be a crossover is because Greg Nicotero, the executive producer of The Walking Dead, is one of my best friends in the entire world, and I almost ended up staying at his house when I was in Atlanta. That would be a very fun. I don't know. They live in slightly different universes, but we're about 11 minutes down the street. But it was great to go down there and have friends there.
He did the season opener that I mentioned at the tease, had 17 million viewers watching, and people still are tweeting and social media away what happened. They cannot.
Yes, I know.
They cannot say enough about that episode.
I will be on, if you're a fan of The Walking Dead, I will be appearing on The Talking Dead this Sunday after the second episode.
Oh,
so I get to
any
watch
it early. Any invitation for Greg to do your series?
Well, oddly, Greg is in show business because of Jaws. Greg is obsessed with Jaws. He loves it. It's his favorite movie. So the second episode of the show that I wrote for Greg to direct. And it is a Jaws parody with a demon goat instead of a shark. And then because of our schedule, our schedule got moved because we had to move our schedule so we could get John McGinley. And by the time we were ready to shoot that, Greg had already started The Walking Dead, so we couldn't have Greg. So we had a new director, and I had to tell this new director, yeah, it's a low-budget parody of Jaws with a demonic goat. I'm sorry, but you have to direct it. But, yeah, that was actually written for Greg to direct. And if you go online to see, the very first thing Greg ever directed is a really funny short movie called The United Monster Talent Agency. I actually play the Wolfman in that. It's one of my more proud accomplishments.
The ties that really, really bind. You hear it here first?
Yeah, they're called monster kids. There's these kids who grew up watching monster movies instead of playing baseball. We all went into show business.
This Halloween night, check out Stand Against Evil, Episode 1 on IFC, the always-on, slightly-off network. Again, that's this Halloween night, Monday, 10 p.m. Pacific time. Then catch its regular time period, 48 hours later, Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific, two episodes back-to-back on that night. And remember, you can check your local listings for IFC is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details online, here's where you go, IFC.com, just exactly the way it sounds. IFC.com. Stand Against Evil, Monday, then Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. David Gould, thank you again for joining us. A pleasure all the way. Good luck with this series. Hopefully a wonderful run. Best to John, Sarah, and the crew. And Greg Nicotero also. Hope he gets, if he gets a second season, he gets in. Congrats to Greg on the opening of Walking Dead this past Sunday night. He did an extraordinary job with a very controversial episode. David,
yes,
Oliver,
I know.
Take
I will,
care.
Thank you very, very much, Simon.
You're welcome. And say hi, Greg. Again, John, everybody.
I will. I'm
going
to talk to him later today. I will tell him you said hi.
All right. You got it. Take care.
Bye-bye.
David Gould, creator and executive producer of Stand Against Eagle, joining us live from Los Angeles, the show on IFC. When we come back, we're going to go to upstate New York near West Point, and we're speaking with one of the executive producers of the Emmy Award-winning series Years of Living Dangerously. It's coming to Astro Graphic Channel this Sunday night. David Gilbert will join us after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, the best internet radio 24/7 everywhere in the world and then some, with more than 25 million listeners around the globe every month and growing. It's your home for Black Authors Network Radio. Check out the latest episode, Bonding Through Books, Thursday, November 3rd, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on BTR. And remember, Best of Blog Talk is available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to this 90-minute episode of Tomorrow Tell Life. Second half hour coming your way now. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guests ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going live to Australia, and we'll hear from Graham McLean, the creator and executive producer of the new pop TV series based on the horror movie franchise, Wolf Creek. Also ahead, our Clapper Trivia Question of the Week, and our show to know, tonight's final season premiere of Rectify. Saw it at the New York Television Festival last night. It's a stunner. And if Adam Thielen and Aiden Young, the star of that show, does not get an Emmy nomination for this episode and the series overall, tough situation with the Emmy judges. They should definitely consider it after catching an episode. More about that later in the program. But right now, 2 years ago, Showtime premiered a series that dealt powerfully with the issue of climate change in a very unusual way. In Years of Living Dangerously, rather than doing a straight documentary about here's climate change and take a look at it for yourself, he had notables from across the country check out for themselves, up close and personal, the situation. This Sunday night, Years of Living Dangerously moved to National Geographic Channel and also kicks off a special series called Earth Week, which includes a lot of unique, original, and acquired programming dealing with the subject of the environment and climate change. Joining us live from upstate New York near West Point, executive producer David Gelbert. David, it's a pleasure to have you aboard.
Hey, Simon. How you doing?
Very, very well, thank you. At the screening of this, at the Emergency Natural History, you and the other producers really stated up front, the first season of Years was all about exposing the problem. This is about the solution. Was it more difficult to showcase the solution than to expose the problem in the first season?
I'm not sure I totally got that. I mean, you're asking about solutions, but I just wanted to say, first of all, that having listened to a little bit of your previous interview, I think we ought to go out and see if there's any kind of climate connection to demonic goats, because no one has denied that there is a relationship between a warmer climate and all those demonic goats out there. So I think maybe we should think about that for season three as a possible storyline.
I love it. And we can get Dana involved, and he can put some comedy into it, some good, sharp comedy into it also.
Okay. So anyway, you're asking me about solutions and about that being the focus of this series. You know, actually, the way I'd put it is that we're really talking about a race against time. Because on one hand, what we now know is that the consequences of global warming are accelerating at a pace that scientists did not expect 10 or 15, 20 years ago. I mean, the ice sheets are melting in the poles faster than expected. The wildfires are getting worse. The droughts are getting worse. Worse, and when I say worse, I mean worse than scientists had predicted they would get by this time. You know, on the other hand, what is true is that there are solutions that are coming online at a somewhat faster pace than might have been expected. I mean, we're seeing incredible progress in the area of electric vehicles, for instance, and we don't know how that's going to turn out, but but it's pretty exciting. Things that are happening, for instance, in China right now, are incredibly encouraging, much more so than we would have imagined looking at China 5, 6, 7 years ago. I mean, the Chinese are really on this issue right now. And, you know, and here in this country, Obama, you know, I think has been really remarkable. I mean, he's been very strong, unrelenting. This is really one of his legacy issues. And in spite of the fact that we have a presidential candidate who thinks that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese to undermine America's industrial strength, and you know who I'm talking about, you know, this is an issue which there's every evidence that people are recognizing the importance of it.
How do you determine which celebrities go where? I mean, do you tell David Letterman, go to India, which he did, and see what you can find there? Seth Strong, you go to Nevada. There's a big use of solar panels. There's a company out there that's trying not to have that happen. Or ex-celebrity, you go here. How do you and your fellow producers determine who went where?
Well, you know, to some degree, we gave people their choice. I mean, some of these folks were very easy to sign on. I mean, Letterman, for instance, was one of the easiest because he really cares about this issue. And, you know, getting Dave Letterman to do a story about climate change in India was just, I mean, we were ecstatic about it. And he did exactly what we hoped. He did a story that is informative and it's also incredibly entertaining, as I hope people will find out for themselves on Sunday night. He's a wonderful guy who takes this seriously. And for the most part, what I would say it is the case that every single one of the performers that we had and the experts, well, no, not experts, the performers, the stars, the actors that agreed to do it are people who really care about this. I mean, another example, Bradley Whitford, who, of course, starred on West Wing and was just fantastic on West Wing, was excited to come and do a story about what really happens on Capitol Hill. I mean, this is a guy who was able to solve the Middle East problem in 2 episodes on West Wing. His climate change is a little tougher. But Brad came and did a story about Republicans, about the Republican Congressional Caucus, which is by far the biggest obstacle to progress on climate change, you know, in the world right now. And Brad went and did stories about Republicans who are coming around on the issue. You know, a lot of it is just kind of marrying our correspondents, our actor correspondents, to stories that they care about.
One of the things about this series is not only the matching of the celebrity, the six different sides of this, but also to see how they comprehend face-to-face what they learn. The Letterman segment is very magical because you see like different sides of India. India is one of the richest countries in the world. It is becoming as industrial and technology-wise as the United States or any other country in the world, and yet there's also a lot of, not just prosperity, but a lot of poor and a lot of poverty. And it was interesting to see how he's like transversing back and forth between these different cultures to see how each of them not only would solve the problem, but also both might contribute each other to finding the problem or finding the solution.
Well, you know, it has to be something of great concern to us. I mean, if there are 300 million people in India who don't have access to electricity, if they get electricity by burning coal, we're all affected by that. I mean, that carbon pollution doesn't stay in one place. I mean, it affects the entire globe, and so we have a tremendous stake in how India chooses to solve its energy problems. And Dave understood that. But you know, I mean, I think watching Dave in India was thrilling because this is a guy who sat at a desk in Times Square for 30 years, and you know, didn't get out much, and he just loved doing this, and you could sense that this was really a life-changing experience for him. I mean, those are his words, not mine.
David Gelber is one of the executive producers of Years of Living Dangerously, whose second season begins this Sunday night on the National Geographic Channel as part of a brand new project there called Earth Week, which will be running all week long. You join us live from Harrison, New York, right near West Point, beautiful country up there, this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from downstate in New York, 50 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you're with us this midweek. If you have a question or comment for David, raise the voice, raise this number up, 646-652-2906. Number works anywhere you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on Friday's episode, we'll have David Jenkins. He's the creator and co-executive producer with Conan O'Brien of the new TBS comedy, People of Earth. People who've seen it say it's one of the best new comedies so far this season. And following him, we'll have the program director of one of the new streaming services you can catch on your smart TV set or device like Roku, Apple TV, and Chromecast. It's called Rooster Teeth. Very interesting content there. We'll talk about it with the head of programming, Evan Brinkman. It's all coming up Friday, 3:30 Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. For you, David, what was the most unique segment that happened for the second season?
You know, I actually learned stuff. I mean, there's a piece that Josh Jackson, the actor who from The Affair, does a piece. I'll give you two cases, maybe three. One is Josh's piece about ocean acidification, about the fact that, which sounds like a snore, but man, it is really a compelling story. You know, it's a story about how we are in the process of killing all of our coral reefs, and in doing so, we're affecting the you know, seafood, sea life. I mean, the fish that are available to people, poor people around the world, are diminishing the volume of seafood, and the result of it is going to be people having to leave their homes, leave their countries, and find other places where they can survive. There's another story along the same lines, in a way, that Tom Friedman did. Tom Friedman from the New York Times did about Africans who have to leave their homes because their fertile land is turning into desert. And, you know, we're living at a time when the world can't deal very well with 1 million Syrian refugees. What happens if there are tens of millions of African refugees, which is what scientists are expecting, because they can't support themselves on their land anymore? I mean, it's really chilling stuff, and it really is the single biggest issue out there. And it's, you know, stunning to me that it's gotten so little attention in this presidential campaign. Now, you know, the other thing that in terms of stories that affected me, we decided to, on the solution side, we really wanted to focus on politics, on the political obstacles to finding solutions. And we came to the conclusion that the one thing that really has to happen if this is going to get turned around is that we have to put a price on carbon. I mean, we have to make sure that the people who do the polluting actually pay to dump that crap in the atmosphere. And this is something that China is now doing. China is unveiling a cap and trade program next year that will make it expensive for utilities companies to emit carbon into the atmosphere, and without that kind of an approach, we're just not going to fix this thing. So we have one story that was done by Nikki Reed, the actress Nikki Reed, who along with her husband Ian Somerhalder have been strong presences in the series. And Nikki does a story about some college kids who figure out that the thing to do on climate change is to get their legislators to put a price on carbon, and that's beginning to happen, and we're excited about that and trying to nurture that movement.
One of the most unique stories close to home is the one done by America Ferrari, the actress from Superstore, who also is involved with America Divided. We talked about in our first half hour, where she goes to, I believe it's Milwaukee or outside Milwaukee, and she's dealing with the aftermath of a steel town or an industrial town that is
Waukegan, and
they're facing a very interesting crisis in terms of how they have to deal with solution to their side of climate change. And it's not an easy situation because you're dealing with people who have been displaced, in some cases, you know, unemployed, and it's sort of how do you work with them or come up with a solution that works for everybody.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. By the way, America's fantastic. I mean, she's a really smart woman. And, you know, I worked with 60 Minutes producers all my life, and America has the kind of intelligence to that rivals any correspondent I've ever worked with. I mean, she's a really very strong personality and a very bright woman who knows how to follow up in an interview. Anyway, she does the story about Waukegan, which has lost a lot of its industrial strength and companies. And, you know, it's really true that there has got to be a way of creating new jobs and new opportunities and new wealth for people who have been left out in the cold by the decline of, for instance, the coal industry. And I think that's one of the things that's very much on the agenda for our next president. And it's also very, very directly connected to the understanding that we got to build a clean economy. We got to focus on developing renewables, and there's all kinds of potential jobs in the you know, in the solar business, in the wind business, you know, I think that this is something that we try to focus on the show is the importance of building that green economy.
And part of that also, I guess, and it sort of strikes home in that particular segment, is how do you retrain people who all their lives have worked through no fault of their own on one form of energy and try to encourage them to be part of the next form in a way that empowers them as opposed to having them feel like they can't learn a new skill, they can't learn a new trade, you know, doing whatever the situation is all they've done all their lives, and now it's what do I live for?
You know, Simon, we have a real political debate in this country about whether we want a government to be strong or a government to be weak. You know, in the weak government scenario, the government doesn't do much about that. People just, you know, if they can't make it on their own, tough luck. And if they can't figure out a way to develop a new skill, so sorry. But the other, you know, argument about government is that government can play a huge role in retraining people and providing opportunities for people to move from a sector that's dying to a sector that's growing. And I think it just gets – I think that your question, I mean, gets very much tied into what kind of a government do we want. We want a strong government, you know, that engages these kind of issues, or one that's weak and ignores them.
Years of Living Dangerously, Season 2, begins this Sunday night, 8:30 Pacific Time on the National Geographic Channel, and it's the beginning of Earth Week, a special first-time-ever week of programming on that service. We've got David Goebel, one of the executive producers of this award-winning series in Season 2, live from upstate New York here on this half hour on Suavi Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Happy you're aboard on this Wednesday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for David, don't be shy. He's listening to you, and he will with this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up our next half hour, we're going live to Australia, and we'll check in with horror movie master Greg McLean. His Wolf Creek, considered one of the top horror movie franchises of the last decade and a half, has just become a miniseries on the Pop TV Network through Lionsgate, and we'll have him live next half hour. David, what made the journey go from Showtime to National Geographic Channel? And then on top of that, once you got their commitment, how did you decide the subjects? Did all of them sort of cry out for attention? Were there some that you had to uncover for yourself and say, okay, this must be part of what we do?
Well, you know, we were just, we had basically a one-season deal with Showtime, which was great, and they were terrific people. Nat Geo is a much bigger platform, and it fits us better. I mean, this is an issue that Nat Geo, as you pointed out, is taking really seriously. I mean, there's a Leo DiCaprio film that'll be on the same night that we premiere. We're going to be on for, you know, for 8 weeks, and Nat Geo has really, you know, gotten serious about promoting us, and we're thrilled to be a partner of Nat Geo's in the series. You know, as for the stories, I mean, you know, we're reporters, and you know, after all those years at 60 Minutes, we know how to find where the most important stories are, and I think that we've pretty much, I mean, there are always more stories to tell, you know, the last story that we did and that will be in our last episode, I went to China with Sigourney Weaver, actually to Hong Kong, and did a story about what the Chinese are doing. Because, you know, what you hear a lot on talk radio is you hear, you know, the people saying, well, you know, why should the U.S. do anything about this issue because the Chinese aren't doing anything, which, of course, is exactly not true. In fact, it's the opposite of the truth. The Chinese weren't doing anything about it for a very long time, and then when their air started to, you know, choke their citizens, they sort of got the point about 5, 6, 7 years ago, and they've done some amazing things to turn things around in China. They're actually way ahead of us in some ways. So, you know, I mean, that was a story. We felt we had to go to China because there's really no way you can do it. You can do a meaningful series on climate change without talking about China, which is still the biggest user of coal, which of course is the main cause of climate change. But you know, it was encouraging to see that they really are taking steps to reduce their reliance on coal, and also that the Chinese and the Americans have come together in an amazing partnership. I mean, there's been real leadership from both the American administration, the Obama administration, and the Chinese leadership to get a global response to climate change. Is it enough so far? No, it's not. But it's certainly, it's, you know, 5 years ago, it would have been hard to predict that the U.S. and China would work together on this issue as effectively as they are now doing.
On that first episode Sunday night, the Cecily Strong segment deals with a solution that is working. Solar panels in Nevada, it's popular, and the company that is one of the major providers of it is being torn down because of politics. And the thing you're left with that segment is, why? It just strikes like you've got a solution here that's working. People love it. And it was fascinating to see the politics behind this, of this company that is a great success story that could be eradicated, or may be on the verge of eradication, because some political force is like saying, as it turned out, while the story went, it's not just in Nevada, it's other states too.
Well, you know, it is in other states, and actually it's not all that complicated. I mean, utilities are not the swiftest companies in America. I mean, they're not that light on their feet. And one thing that is absolutely anathema to utilities is this quaint notion of competition. They don't like it. They much prefer to be a monopoly provider. And so in places where rooftop solar companies have begun to get traction, because people do want rooftop solar, they've managed to go into the legislatures and get the legislature to do what they can to stop solar panel in its tracks. And that's happened. And the story that Cecily Strong tells in Sunday's show is about the utilities in Nevada and Florida, where, and amazingly enough, in the Sunshine State of Florida, where it's almost impossible to afford to get solar panels on your rooftop, which is, of course, bizarre and insane in terms of what we're facing with climate change these days. I mean, for that not to be possible is crazy.
I do want to point out there's a very interesting and unique twist to that story. I'm not going to mention it now, but if you watch the segment, keep your eye on it. I will say this. It's a very interesting left turn that might very well be something that all states and maybe the federal government should take a strong look at. I'll leave it at that. If you get a third season on Nat Geo, is there a story that you couldn't do with this bunch of episodes that immediately will be right at the top?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, Nat Geo has been amazingly, I mean, just been such a great partner. They really have been. I mean, they've been open to anything we wanted to do. You know, we had the story, we were concerned that maybe they wouldn't be willing to face up to the political challenges here, and they were absolutely open to it. I mean, the story I think I mentioned before that Brad Whitford did, where we follow a guy who made a lot of money in the private sector, sold his business, and has devoted his life. This is a guy in the Philadelphia area, and he's devoted his professional life to taking a train every day from 30th Street Station in Philly down to Union Station in Washington. And then he goes and he knocks on the doors of Republican congressmen And he's been doing this for 10 years, and he's now managed to try and flip them on climate, to sort of turn them around on the urgency of doing something about climate. And he's been rather successful in the last year. It's sort of a great story, and it really does get at the heart of the problem, I mean, where we have this kind of this dark political money and dark political force in this country that's resisting progress on climate change. So there's no one story that we couldn't do this year. There are plenty of other stories to tell. This is not an issue that's going away. I mean, Jack Black, who's spectacular, goes down to Miami and does a story about the likelihood that Miami won't be with us for that many more decades. This is not, you know, a crazy conclusion of radical activists. This is what conservative climate scientists are saying. He even makes it funny because it's Jack Black. So I hope that's our second episode. That'll be on in 2 weeks. But there's nothing that we really wanted to do that we couldn't do. We did pretty much everything we wanted to do, and I'm sure that by the time season 3 rolls around, there'll be a whole bunch of new stories, because this story is not going away. It's not getting better right now, for the most part. And we really are in a race against time, and we're going to have to see what happens over the next couple of years. And obviously what happens in the next administration is going to be central to where we end up.
And on that note, we will remind you that Years of Living Dangerously returns for its second season through the National Geographic Channel this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It will also help kick off a new project for that network, Earth Week. Again, that's Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on the National Geographic Channel. Check your local for where that network is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program, here's where you go, www.natgeotv.com, www.natgeotv.com. I saw the first episode a few weeks ago. You will find it engaging, enlightening, and hopefully it will be the beginning of maybe taking some action to reduce the threat of climate change and its consequences in this country and around the world. David Geber, one of the executive producers, congratulating to you and your team for what you've put together for season 2 on Nat Geo. Wish you the very best of luck, and hopefully it sparks a lot more and also sparks even more work by you and your team in the years ahead.
Hey, Simon, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. You got it. Take care.
Okay, man. Take care.
David Gilbert, executive producer of Years of Living Dangerously, joining us live from Harrison, New York, near West Point, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We have more coming your way, but first, this message from the fine people at Audible.com. You a Phil Collins fan? I certainly am. Love his music for years, both solo and with Genesis. And now you can hear him audiobook style thanks to Audible.com with his brand new tome called Not Dead Yet. It is a great read, and it's a great listen because he does it himself. And you can get that audiobook right now with a trial offer from Audible.com. Audible.com is a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information with over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now, at Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, like Not Dead Yet by Phil Collins, or any one of your choice, and a 1 month trial of the service. And given Audible's an Amazon company, you better know the quality customer service is right there from the very get-go. So check out Not Dead Yet by Phil Collins, or any of the great titles that Audible offers in any category you can think of, and then some. Remember, the URL to go to is audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, and get yourself a sensational sound experience from audible.com and Amazon Company. When we come back, we are going live to Australia, and we are speaking with the Wolf Creek person himself, creator and executive producer Greg McLean. He will join us after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, where the 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Autoing After Hours. That's Autoline After Hours. Everything about autos, and it's not just what they do on the road, but how they're put together. Autoline After Hours, Fridays, different times, every week on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best VTR available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marty Talk Artist this Wednesday afternoon, and welcome to all of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Avalanche with you live from New York, 50 degrees at the top of the hour here in NYC. Got a great guest coming your way from overseas, and we invite you to be part of the program. Here's the number you use to be involved. It's 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. Numbers get anywhere, you can across the country, around the globe, here on BTR. We got a chat room going too. Simon Apple, do it for by name, and Rick with our friend from Philadelphia, still in the room. And remember, you can still connect others with Facebook Timeline, so click on the Facebook icon somewhere in the blog talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. And now joining us live from Australia via satellite is the creator executive producer of first the horror movie franchise, and now the horror miniseries franchise, Wolf Creek, Friday night at 10 o'clock here in the US of A on Pop Network. We welcome in Greg McLean. Greg, welcome aboard at 7 a.m. your time in Australia.
Yes, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Good afternoon to us here. What's been the reaction you've gotten from Wolf Creek, the miniseries?
The reaction so far has been amazing. The show came out in Australia and the UK before it hit the States a week or so ago. It's been amazing. I mean, the show was a big hit in Australia. It was a big hit in the UK. The show translated really well to American audiences. We had a screening at Screamfest last week with the actor John Jarrett visiting and doing a Q&A. And people seem to really love the series, which is really exciting for everyone involved.
How long did you thought about turning what has been a wonderful horror movie franchise, spanning several motion pictures, into, all right, we're going to do a miniseries?
I had the idea for a couple of years. We'd been trying for a while to think about what storyline could work as a TV series. It took us a while to actually, frankly, work out how to do it. And when we finally had the idea of making it into a revenge thriller as opposed to a straight horror film or a horror story, it all came together. And the next thing that happened was realizing that we needed to have a very strong female character as the lead. So it still has Mick Taylor, the evil bad guy from the movies, but we turned the whole concept around by making it a revenge tale about a very plucky, very very tough young woman who takes on Mick and goes to hunt down the serial killer. So that kind of gave it a fresh perspective and a new way to approach the story.
I believe we have a call right off the bat, Greg. Let's take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from? Hello, you're on the air. All right, guess not. If you come on, call back and we'll get you on. Okay, that person just dropped off. Call us back at 646-652-96 and get us on the air. What was the trigger in terms of making the mini? So what was like the turning point in terms of saying, let's go for it?
My company and another company got together and we had a week-long story meeting. And I basically sat down and said, look, here's all my ideas about what it could be. And they pitched a bunch of ideas as well. And by the end of the 5 days, we kind of had something we're all so excited about. Because what we all wanted to do was we wanted to go into the world of Wolf Creek and into the world of the films. But we knew we had to find a very different kind of story engine because the movies essentially work in, you know, they work as slasher films. There's a bad guy who hunts down people and kills them. He's a fascinating character, but we didn't really get to know much about him. And so doing a longer form story, you get to really mine the background of his character and explore his history while also having a different kind of narrative drive, because fundamentally this becomes much more of a detective revenge story than a straight kind of horror tale. So once we realized there was a different way to tell the story that could become an ongoing kind of story world, we thought this is something worth doing, and we all got very excited about it.
And inside the revenge drama, how do you develop the both characters, both the antagonist, John's character, and the female character who is the protagonist?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, the main character, Eve, she's an American, a young American woman traveling in Australia with her family. And in the very first episode, I don't want to give too much of a spoiler away, but in the very first episode, she loses her family to Mick in a very, very intense kind of way. And so fundamentally, her character starts at the very bottom emotionally because she's kind of had her world destroyed by Mick. And so she's motivated to hunt down this character and work out who he is. And Mick really is an interesting kind of character because he's untouchable in many ways. He's always 10 steps ahead of everyone else, and he knows what's going on with everybody. So he basically is aware that he's being pursued, and then basically he begins leading her on a path that she doesn't know she's going down, which leads to a confrontation at the end between the two characters. But by the time she's got to him, she's kind of transformed in a really fascinating way, because she has to take on the skills of this character to be able to beat him. So it's a really interesting character transformation, and the performance by Lucy Fry, who's an amazing Australian actress who's playing an American character, is really quite remarkable. And John Jarrett is just a great actor as well, who portrays Mick Taylor. So he gives another great kind of chilling performance as the serial killer.
What makes him great? For a lot of people who have not seen the Wilfried films, this is his American debut, and in some cases worldwide debut. What makes John fly in this character? What does he bring to your situation?
I think two things. One is that John as an actor is an extremely, I mean, he's a great actor, and I think every actor has a character they were kind of born to play, where the character and their own personal history and their own personality, there's a point where the actor and the character disappear, and you realize there's no one else who could ever play this character because of a particular meeting of actor and personal history and what's on the page. The other thing is that John, you know, is kind of aware of that, and also he plays the character with such a degree of relish, and also he plays it with no judgment. It'd be very easy to play this character and judge him very harshly somewhere in your mind that, you know, someone could be this despicable and this evil. But John really has a way of playing this character completely non-judgmentally, and in fact kind of enjoying his evil. I think those two things make it a really unique performance.
Wilfried, based on the hit horror movie franchise, is now on Pop TV Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, and winning terrific reviews and terrific viewer response, I might add. And we've got live from Australia, 7 a.m. local time, just past 4 o'clock New York time, Greg McLean, the director and creator of the franchise and the creative executive producer of the miniseries. He's with us this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're aboard this midweek afternoon. And if you're listening from Australia, Thursday morning your time, still somewhat midweek. And if you have a question or comment for Greg, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name is there for you. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/television. Remember, coming up on Friday's episode, we lead off with David Jenkins. He's the creator and co-executive producer with Conan O'Brien of the new TBS comedy, People of Earth. It's already getting advanced rave reviews. Some critics think it's one of the best new comedies on television anywhere this year. And then check out one of the new streaming services you can find on your smart TV set or device like Roku, Apple TV, and Chromecast. It's called Rooster Teeth, and we've got the head of programming, Evan Bregman. That's all Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our normal time, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Greg, we started the show with Dana Gould, who's doing Stand Against Evil for IFC, and he, like you, is a case of someone who is sort of evolving from being someone who writes and directs for other people to someone who's running the show. And I'm curious, as you made the transition to be, you know, your own boss in terms of a film or film series, to being your own boss in terms of a miniseries, how was the transition for you, where you are in fact the boss of an entire enterprise, and you're dictating to others, here's how to write, here's how to direct?
My experience has been a really positive one. In terms of the Wolf Creek movies, I was the writer of the movies and producer of the movies, so I was able to keep a fair degree of creative autonomy on those projects. Obviously, I had, you know, great collaborators on both movies and great producers working on both of them, but it was really a scenario whereby I was able to instill the overall vision for each of the movies. And it's been a similar process with the TV series, where the directors I've worked with and the writers I've worked with, they all come to the movies with a degree of, you know, genuine curiosity about how the movies work, the visual style, what are the kind of motifs and themes of the series that people have that have resonated with people. So there was a good degree of kind of respect for the source material, even though it's a scary horror film and it's designed to scare the hell out of audiences. There was a genuine interest in trying to maintain the aesthetics and the qualities of the TV series. And, you know, because I was at the head of the team, I was able to kind of keep reminding us, This is what Mick would do. This is how the series works. This is what the style should be. So it kind of, you know, in terms of, you know, fans from the movies going to the series, they will recognize, you know, very similar kind of aesthetic qualities and thematic ideas that go through all of the movies and all of the and the TV series as well. So that's kind of what I've, that's what I really bring to it, is a consistency of tone and hopefully a quality control as well, to make sure that the writing is up to scratch and the acting's all amazing. And, you know, those are the most important things to me as a creator, is that the writing performances are always spot on, and that's a really genuinely atmospheric and thrilling show. That's my goal. So, yeah, that, and I think I was able to bring that to the series.
A number of independent filmmakers who are now getting into television approach what they do in TV from the standpoint of, I'm going to make a six-hour or a 10-hour movie. And that's
right.
That's how I see the show. Was that your situation as well? I'm going to make a six hour movie. And at any point did you think, well, maybe I should direct the first episode, or I should direct an episode along the way?
Yes. I mean, originally I was directing the whole series. That was what we had slated to have happen. And then I was directing a movie for James Gunn. Who and Peter Safran, who did Guardians of the Galaxy and the Conjuring. So I was doing this movie called The Balco Experiment, and I was editing it in Burbank in LA, and the TV series was starting pre-production, and we just kept on going in post-production, and I'm like, guys, I've got this TV series coming up, I've got to finish. And they're like, well, we've got to keep going. So and it took us a while to lock the cut on The Balco Experiment, and that meant that I had to basically say to my partners on the TV series, look, I'll come and do the finale, which is a massive episode, but let's find some other fantastic director to take over 1 to 5. And so luckily we found Tony Tills, who's a brilliant Australian director who'd been actually working on the Evil Dead series in New Zealand, and so he came across and did 1 to 5 and did a phenomenal job. But really, I was going to do the whole thing, but I had a commitment on a movie that was finishing and couldn't get out of. And which turned out amazingly, by the way. It was such a great experience working with those guys. So that was really how that came about, you know, how it came about. Because generally people do, they direct the pilot and set the tone as opposed to doing the end episode. But that's why that came about. But it was very much like, you know, we did decide to say, look, we're doing, you know, 6 little movies. We're not doing TV. We want to shoot it like a film. We want it to look cinematic. And also the other reason is I have no idea how to do TV, so I don't know the difference. So to me, I made it exactly like I was making a movie.
But what I think you're saying now with a lot of television shows is they're becoming more cinematic, and maybe that's because of part of high-definition television and now Ultra HD, Ultra Def. But also you get more of a sense of people's vision. When you watch a show like Mr. Robot or a show like Eyewitness or a show like Atlanta, whether it's comedy, drama, hybrid, dramedy, etc., there's this sense of a vision that is sustainable throughout, whether it's 10 episodes, 8 episodes, 13 episodes, from beginning to end. And you get the sense that it's the creator that's not just running the show, but maintaining that vision.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, if you think about... you think about a show like Sopranos, which you know, you think about a show like Breaking Bad, or the shows that became global phenomenons, whereby, you know, a writer or creator devised a storytelling method and an aesthetic, and basically that particular combination of approach to a story became something amazing. And I think, you know, and this is, it's obviously not a recent thing, but I think it's become the norm now, because as viewers with movies, we want to feel like we're listening to a particular voice, a singular voice telling a story in a particular way. And that's why it's a great thing. And I think now that the landscape and entertainment environment is so crowded, people more and more, you know, really want to feel like they're listening to a unique voice. And I think that wasn't always the case, because obviously, you know, it's a corporate business, and TV is a machine, and you've got to they just turn stuff out. I think it's becoming the opposite of that now, where the more unique a voice it is, the more valued it is. You know what I mean? So I feel like that's the big change, and I think that's part of the reason why filmmakers and movie directors are attracted to long form storytelling and TV now, because their unique voice is appreciated and encouraged, as opposed to saying, oh, well, let's just make it like this and don't do anything different. Now it's, you know, the directive from my network making this series was make it as you know, don't dumb it down and don't do anything differently. In fact, go as far as you can in terms of making it unique to what that thing is, unique to what Wolf Creek is and what your style is, which is really great. And that was, you know, a surprise for me because I'd, you know, as I said, I'd never done TV before. It's a new thing for me. And I'd always had a perception that I would have to, you know, the network was going to give notes and it would be all this kind of stuff. But it was the opposite. I had a really great creative experience. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to do another series of the show.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to that in a moment. But two things in one. First of all, this is a groundbreaker in two ways. One, Pop Network has not done a scripted drama yet. This is their first. They've done comedies.
Yes.
One coming up on Nightcap. There's Switch Creek. There's another one, Joy McIntyre Show. So this is a first for them. And it really came out of the blue in a way because it wasn't expected when people talked about what would be on Pop TV's fall season and this current season. The other is, it gives us a wonderful look at the Australian outback, which we've seen in a lot of
right.
local movies. I remember Walkabout in the 1970s and others. But it's one of the first miniseries or regular series in several years done in Australia. And it seems every time Australia comes here, I remember Top of the Lake, the show that Jane Campion did, which I understand will be a sequel coming out next year with Elizabeth Moss of Mad Men fame. I believe that will be
yes.
Sundance TV. It just seems that shows coming out of Australia, dramatic series, have just a special kind of ethereal quality to them. And I'm curious how you try to bring that about by shooting it in the outback.
I think that, you know, Australia is a, you know, Australia's a funny place. It's, you know, we have a very long and interesting history with our landscape and with the outback because, you know, Australia is, you know, essentially this vast island in the middle of nowhere that has, you know, these cities perched on the outside of it. And in the middle is this vast, open, empty space. And the outback has always been a place, you know, that artists and writers and filmmakers have filled with these imaginative stories about what could be out there and the kind of world that could exist there. So it's always been a realm of the imagination, the Australian outback. And I think, you know, rightly so, it's been, you know, romanticized in movies like, you know, in Crocodile Dundee and certain movies, where the outback is shown as being a kind of, you know, an untamed wilderness. It's very beautiful but kind of dangerous. And then obviously Wolf Creek takes the opposite approach where it shows the beauty and scale of the outback but also shows the danger of that isolation, which comes from characters who can be a bit, you know, crazy, mad or just downright evil like Mick Taylor. So I feel like, you know, a lot of Australians take advantage of this amazing landscape we have and the uniqueness of the landscape because it, in many ways it's kind of like the American West. And in making the series and certainly the second Wolf Creek movie, you know, I kind of recognize the kind of parallels to the American West in telling both stories. In fact, the second Wolf Creek movie, you know, the movie we had on loop as research for it was The Searchers. And there was actually a couple of nods to that movie in terms of how we frame shots and how we shot the landscape. And this story as well, it kind of, you know, even though it's Australian outback and it is quite spectacular and kind of magical, there's kind of a structural idea we borrowed from the American Western. Whereas, you know, and I think John Jarrett mentioned at one point about this character that Lucy plays. She's kind of the female version of Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven. She's the American cowboy character. And I think this is maybe why the show is translating very well to the States, because on the one hand, you have the exotic quality of the Australian outback, which is, you know, really interesting and different and unique. On the same time, you've got a really classic, it's basically a Western structure, but it's got this extremely dark, grim tale told in this kind of very familiar kind of form. I think that combination is quite an interesting, you know, way to go.
We have a few more minutes with Greg McLean live from Australia, where it's coming up on 20 after 7 their time, Thursday morning. Right now it's 20 after 4, almost 20 after 4, New York Eastern time. We're delighted to have you with us on Tomorrow Be Televised and Greg Board 2. You have a question or comment, get it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Greg, my friend from Philadelphia, still in the room. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll speak with the former head of Fuel TV, the former Fox Action Extreme Sports Network that was presented around the world, DJ Olivares. Now he's chief content officer of a new stream service called Everyday Networks, and the revival of Fuel TV is going to be part of that. He'll tell us all about it on Halloween afternoon. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Greg, are we hearing right that there will be a Wolf Creek 2, the miniseries?
We're talking about it now. I've written an outline for the series. And I'm having a meeting with, we're all meeting up in next week to work out whether we can do it. I mean, the response to the series, you know, here and in everywhere we've shown it has been so phenomenal that there seems to, you know, this, obviously you only do things if there's a demand for it. And it seems like there's a genuine enthusiasm for seeing more. So we would love to do it, but it's not confirmed yet, but we'd all very much like to do it.
And is the TV experience here exciting you about maybe doing other TV series, whether, you know, something totally different from horror, straight drama, comedy, hybrid, dramedy? Is that something you might want to look at for down the road?
Yeah, definitely. I actually came back to I was in Toronto recently, went to the festival up there, and then came back through LA for a week, and the entire week was meeting different companies about TV shows. I mean, it's such a vibrant landscape at the moment, and for creators, it's a really great time to be able to go and, you know, just pitch crazy ideas. And there's a lot of interest in obviously finding new shows, and also particularly, you know, Australia as a place is a great place to shoot movies and TV. We've got a lot of great actors who come from here, who a lot of whom you know work in LA. So there's a good synergy at the moment between being an Australian filmmaker and working in the States.
Will Creek, the miniseries, you can catch it this Friday night, 10 p.m. Pacific time on the Pop TV network. Check your local listings for where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. It's also being carried around the world by various channels as well. For more details about the program online here in the U.S. of A., go to this website, poptv.com. That's poptv.com. Will Creek, Fridays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Greg McLean, the creative executive producer of Wolf Creek, and also the creative director of the Wolf Creek Horror Movies. Thanks again for staying up and joining us early your time Thursday morning. It's a pleasure to have you aboard, and I hope we can have you again as hopefully you continue your exploits in television, both horror and otherwise. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. Take care. All the greatest.
Thank you. Take care.
Ray McLean from Wolf Creek joining us live from Australia, exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. In a moment, our latest show to know is happening tonight on Sundance TV. But first, time for our classic trivia question of the week. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com, or use Twitter, #TWBT, and you could win the new Twin Peaks FAQ book, Rebel Flaws. Here's the question we posed originally last week. We held it over for this week, thanks to Norma Lear being our guest on Friday morning. And it's this. What 1980 television series was co-created by Norman Lear and the author of Roots, Alex Haley? What 1980 television series on CBS was co-created by Norman Lear and Roots author Alex Haley? If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your full mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer before Friday afternoon, you will win Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause. It showcases the classic 1990s ABC mystery drama from Mark Frost and David Lynch, and the Showtime revival coming next year with Frost and Lynch writing all the episodes and Lynch directing all the episodes, with Kyle MacLachlan and many of the original cast members back in gear. Again, that's SimonApple04@yahoo.com, or use Twitter, #TWBT. The Twitter option is made available by the fine folks at Hopscotch. The people invite you to create your own social soundtrack. You can learn how at www.hopscotch.com. www.hopscotch.com. Appreciate Marty Monaco and their gang for making that Twitter option happen. If you just missed the question, no problem. I'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, you got to be there to win it, so do that. And finally, our show to know, where we highlight a program that is worth your watching. Usually you might not know about it because it's not well marketed, promoted, publicized, or falls on the radar screen of critics and journalists. Not so with this time's show to know. It's the final season premiere tonight of Rectify on Sundance TV. And it's taking place tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. I had a chance to see that opening episode last night at the New York Television Festival. And let me tell you, it is a stunner. Wonderfully produced and put together by the terrific writer Ray McKinnon, one of the great poets of modern television. It is a marvelous series. If you've caught Rectify before, you know how wonderful it is. An exciting cast led by the brilliant Aidan Young. But this episode is a major turning point in the series. It's a perfect opening episode for the final season. And one of the scenes toward the end, which lasts about 10 minutes without a break, is, I think, one of the best TV scenes you will see all year. And I got news for you. If Aidan Young is not nominated for an Emmy Award for his work in that scene, that episode, and the entire series overall, you have to wonder where the Emmy heads are at. I really invite you to see this show tonight if you can. Rectify on Sunday at TV, the final season opener tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And if you want more details about the show online, here's where you go, www.sundance.tv. That's www.sundance.tv. Is there a show on TV you like but you don't find it publicized around the place? Well, let us know, and if we publicize it, you will get the credit. Again, use that email, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com, enclose your name and where you're from. And again, if we use your show notice suggestion, you, of course, will get the credit. We really do appreciate it. And once again, the final season of Rectify tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Sundance TV. Congratulations to Ray McKinnon for showing up last night at the New York Television Festival. Had a chance to meet him again personally, saw him at the Peabody Awards last year, which the show clearly deserved. It's a wonderful series, and it's going out in a fantastic blaze of glory. It is really a very, well, go down, I think, as one of the very special series to hit television over this last decade. And congratulations to everybody at Sundance TV for making it happen. Remember, Friday on Tomorrow Show Live, we'll cover the opening of the new TBS series, People of Earth, co-created and executive produced by our guest, David Jenkins. And then the director of filming at Stream Service, Rooster Teeth, available on smart TVs and smart TV sets, Evan Bregman. And coming up on Monday, the former head of Fuel, the former Fox Action Extreme Sports Network, CJ Lavar's with us. He's reviving Fuel as part of his new role with the new stream service, Everyday Networks. Again, it's a smart TV set and devices. That's all coming up Friday, and then next Monday, Halloween afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Televised. I want to thank all of our guests for showing up this wonderful 90 minutes, and all of you for tuning in as well. If you came in late on the program or want to catch up on episodes you missed, we've had some fantastic ones all month long. Go to our homepage anytime, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version. It's available also 24/7 at iTunes.com. If you have Apple TV 2.0, you can check out the Apple TV iTunes podcast app. Our show and other Blog Talk Radio shows are there for you full time. If you don't have Apple TV 2.0, go to your local Apple store or order it online. We love hearing from you, so email us, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. However you communicate, it is appreciated. Why? Because what you say matters, absolutely. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Wednesday. We'll be back Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Of course, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Once again, as always, please be safe and be great out there. That helps. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.